Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. Check out the archives at scotthorton.org and sign up for the podcast feed there as well. Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. All right, introducing Michael Bell. Michaelbell.info is his website, and you can find him on Facebook as well at Plea for Change. And he's got this great new, very important, very interesting piece in Politico magazine. It's called Reaching Across the Thin Blue Line: How the Head of a Police Union and the Father of a Son Killed by a Police Officer Found Common Cause. It's by Michael Bell and his co-author, Jim Palmer. Again, the head of a police union. And we've spoken with Michael on the show before. His son was killed in a very questionable shooting back a few years ago. And Michael really got his eye on the ball and kept it there. That the question here is about accountability for cops who kill people. And the way, and this is the American system going all the way back, the way to create accountability is to create separate checks and balances. And so his mission has been to push in Wisconsin, where he's from, especially first, obviously, for a law which he has gotten passed, which mandates independent investigations, or at least people from outside the local district attorney's office and local police department to investigate so-called officer-involved shootings. And this is a huge a bit of progress, if you ask me, for the epidemic of police violence that we face in the country right now. And it's so instructive, and I sent this to a friend of mine who works for a state senator here in Texas. It's so instructive to read this very important article about how he got it done. And so very important stuff. Very happy to have you back here on the show, Michael. Welcome.
And I'm glad to be back, Scott. Thank you for having me.
All right, good deal. Now, so my complaint about Black Lives Matter all this time is that it should have been called Accountability for Police Officers. Because that's the point. That's what really matters. And, you know, after all, if we got to depend on the one day end of racism before we get rid of cop killings, then we're going to be waiting a long, long time. And what we need is a major change now. And we need it on a 50 state basis. And of course, it's got to be somebody from the outside, someone who's not depending on the officer who pulled the trigger to testify for the state in any upcoming trials to be in charge of looking at these things. And you figured this out right away, and you actually figured out how to make this happen. So before we get into the story of your alliance with the police union here and the pushing of the legislation, can you explain to us exactly how it works now in Wisconsin as far as what the law did mandate and what kind of independence exists now in the investigations?
Okay. Well, a little prehistory. Since 1885 in Wisconsin, each police department was allowed to investigate itself in an officer involved fatality. And, our researchers could not find since 1885, since police and fire commissions were formed, a police department, an inquest jury, or a police and fire commission that ever found an officer unjustified in shooting somebody. And it was an impossible record of perfection. And I had my own son killed in 2004. And within 48 hours, the co-workers of the man who killed my son sat down, had a little impromptu board, and said, we reviewed this, and this shooting was justified. And I was a military officer, I was a lieutenant colonel, but more importantly, I was a pilot. And piloting a jet aircraft for the military is very dangerous. And I knew how I kept myself alive and my students alive. And what I ended up doing was saying there should be a military or National Transportation Safety Board type investigation and an officer involved death to determine the true cause and how can we prevent it from happening again? Right now, the focus is on who is right and who is wrong. Essentially, as soon as there's a police shooting, the police officers come out and they try to discredit the victim. The victim's family is in emotional distress. They don't even know how to respond to it. It's a foot race. Law enforcement typically wins. But what needs to happen is there needs to be what we passed in Wisconsin, an external investigation. Essentially, the department that was involved cannot review itself. And so, therefore, we asked for three things in our initial part of the bill. Let's make sure that the officer was in a clear frame of mind when he decided to use deadly force, that he wasn't under the influence of steroids, alcohol, back pain medications, or anything like that. The second thing that we asked for is let's have an external investigation, true professionals coming in, gathering the evidence, gathering the data, gathering the dash cam footage or whatever is available, and then giving it to a third part of our bill, an independent review board made up of experts. We wanted an unbiased expert review, just like the National Transportation Safety Board does. I asked for a lot. Law enforcement wasn't ready for those three issues all simultaneously, but they said we can think of something that we can agree with, and that is let's have an external investigation. So Jim Palmer, director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, a 10,000-member union, and I met under very auspicious circumstances, but we essentially started sitting down and crafting legislation towards that goal.
Well, it's interesting, their objection there that, we don't want to do any kind of drug screenings to make sure that these guys aren't on steroids. Michael Bell, that is just a bridge too far. How dare you? What kind of burden is that to place on our officers that if they shoot somebody, they got to prove that they're not in the middle of roid raging?
Well,
and what's their excuse for that? Do they have? I'm interested in their spin for why, you know, that's not necessary. Who cares if these guys are sniffing coke or not or whatever their problem is?
Well, and the thing is that you can do a quick Google search and you can find out that these types of self-medication issues exist in the police population just as in the general population. And but what's really funny, Scott, is that in the early phases of aviation investigation, pilots weren't too keen about the idea either. But they knew that they had to give this intrusion for the true movement forward of the profession to do that. And so they allowed a testing of their bloodstreams and so forth, because until they determined the true cause of really what caused the accident or the mishap, they were never going to make the system better.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I'm calling for. You're giving a police officer a tremendous amount of power. He has the right to take a life. Shouldn't we be doing everything possible to make sure that that power isn't being abused? And so the systems I'm asking to be put in place, all those that are similar to the National Transportation Safety Board, need to be implemented here.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, just the contrast of virtually everyone listening here who has a salary job of any kind has to take a drug test. It's because of the insurance. And if they work in a warehouse or something, they have an accident, they drop a box or something, they have to take a piss test right then. Cab driver gets in a wreck, that's his fault. He's got to show in order to keep his job that he hadn't been on drugs. So this kind of thing apparently applies to everyone in society except the cops.
Yeah, I had actually seen ordinances within certain municipalities that said if an officer did take some type of blood test, that those results weren't admissible in a court of law, which it kind of infuriated me. But, you know, those things are going by the wayside. Yeah. What I'm calling for nationally, and I believe this to be the case, and I think we've been able to turn the discussion, is that law enforcement is very similar to aviation. Things happen very quickly. They're very deadly. But the two have evolved differently. Law enforcement's been out there for hundreds of years. Aviation's only been around for 70 years. But if you take a look at the occupational safety hazard data regarding law enforcement and flying jets is far more hazardous. We're typically number 3 on the hazardous list, where law enforcement typically doesn't make the top 10. And so I've been telling all the people that are listening is that we need to take the same methods that the National Transportation Safety Board uses and apply it to law enforcement. That's our way out. Mm-hmm. I'm not against law enforcement, Scott. I'm against bad policing. And I know that there are good officers out there. They risk their lives. they want to come home to their family every night. But I also know that bad officers, like the gentleman that killed, or I wouldn't even call him a gentleman, the man that killed Walter Scott out in South Carolina, Laquan McDonald in Chicago, those types of officers need to be held accountable. So I'm asking for essentially four legs to the table. We got one pass in Wisconsin. That's external investigation. But I am also asking for a database. We have nationally, we have no history, no record of anything going on within law enforcement, how many people are killed on a daily basis. If you take a look at aviation has a database of accident collection since 1965. They can make a decision whether their reforms are working or not based on the data they're collecting. How can you legislate a solution in law enforcement when you don't even know whether that reform is going to make any kind of change or not because you don't even have a database? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found curious is that we know how many rats there are in the subway system in New York. We know how many bees there are in across the United States, but we don't know how many people were killed by law enforcement on an annual basis. And that's intentional, and that's a problem, and that needs to change.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, so as far as the NTSB style investigation, I'm not sure exactly what all police powers the NTSB has over the aviation industry as regulators. I mean, I guess if it comes down to it, they can fine and maybe even recommend prosecution and that kind of thing. But when we're talking about police shootings, I guess I'm really interested to know how this actually works in Wisconsin, because it's sort of, you know, people have tried civilian review boards and this and those kinds of things, and they end up seeming like they're not really very much of a check and balance, because they don't really have the authority to subpoena all the relevant data, and they don't have the authority to prosecute. All they have, you know, is sign our names on some petitions, hold some signs, and cry and complain some more. It seems to me like what we really need is to make it where a district attorney or an assistant district attorney from another county in the same state has to come and be the one to review, because then they, and we have things like this. I know here in Texas, there are, well, for example, here in Austin, the district attorney in Austin has a special separate power for doing public corruption investigations all over the state. So even if it's a public corruption case in Amarillo or something like that, he can be prosecuted out of jurisdiction by the district attorney in Texas who has in Travis County, who has that authority. So we already have this kind of thing where prosecutors are brought in from separate jurisdictions to come in. It's just not for cases of police shootings. So why isn't that the simplest solution? Why have a NTSB board? And after all, they shoot so many people. We don't have that many plane crashes. I mean, how many NTSB? It seems like it's, maybe it'd be harder to get this idea to catch on if there's that many moving parts in it.
Well, there is, the NTSB does do a lot of investigations. There's a lot of small aircraft that are out there. Sometimes if somebody didn't die, they'll refer that accident investigation to the FAA. Going back to civilian review, you know, before I brought all my data forward, I hired a researcher and we looked at a number of models of civilian review across the nation. And we found that many, many civilian review boards had the ability to subpoena and to fire. But most of them, in fact, I couldn't find one that had used the subpoena power or the firing power that it was given. So typically that's an appointment issue. But what I'm calling for here is not just a civilian review, but an expert unbiased review. And that's different because if you have a civilian review, there's a officer that has a complaint over a parking ticket or whatever, that can go to civilian review. But taking somebody's life, using that power, it's extremely critical. And I try to tell people that if I was in the cockpit and I had to execute some kind of maneuver, I would not want the local plumber, an attorney, a librarian reviewing what I had to do in a cockpit. They've never been in combat. They have no idea what it's like to fly a jet at hundreds of miles an hour. And I'll be darned if I'm going to have somebody determine whether I was right or wrong. My review has to be conducted by a series of experts that are associated with what it's like to fly a jet. And then they make the determination. So what we asked for in Wisconsin initially was a critical incident review board, a group made up of professionals, not just law enforcement, but professionals that are associated with law and have expertise in this area, and they make a determination. Our original board was going to be comprised of retired district attorneys, retired police chiefs of police and assistant chiefs of police or sheriffs, criminal justice professors, criminal law professors, and some academy people from the training, police training academy. They were the ones that could determine what the true cause was and how to prevent it from happening again. And that's what we're pushing for nationally. But it's going to have to take hold in little hot spots as we move along.
Okay. But so what about my awesome idea about you just get a different county or a different parish or whatever, however it works in your state, and you just it's automatically assigned at random, like a number generator like they do for judges or whatever, and you pick a DA's office at random from another county in the state, and you have them send an assistant DA in to do the check?
I think law enforcement is, or DA and the law enforcement are too close.
Even if it's from a separate jurisdiction, you're thinking that's still too close for comfort there.
Well, and who's going to make it? You know, I mean, essentially, you know, one county can say, let's have this county review our shootings and we'll review their shootings. And we have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want it to be up to them. But and look, I mean, we don't there's not market competition here. We live in these monopoly states with monopolies on police power. One court system per state. You know, one state legislature per state. So there's only so much flexibility here in terms of competition. But that's what I'm talking about. As much, and this is what you're going for too as well, of course, is as much competition, as much check and balance. As James Madison said, ambition must be made to check ambition. You get these different people with police power going at each other, and then hopefully we can remain a little bit free in the breach. You hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
And you're bringing up a good concept. And one of the problems that we had when we were trying to put together our law was who's going to pick who reviews who. You know, I mean, we knew that there were some departments out there that actually had bad blood with another department. And there was no way that this particular county was going to investigate a shooting of some city. And that was an important aspect of that. So we just said, I'll tell you what, let you pick the investigators that you want. Let you pick the investigators that have the expertise that you need, because we knew that it was still a step forward. It wasn't perfect, but it was still a step forward. And so that's why Jim Palmer and I worked together. I can tell you this, and your listeners need to know this, that what I know now after pushing for that law and after all the things that I did, that I could not have been successful and my team could not have been successful in the state of Wisconsin if it wasn't for law enforcement. Legislators are petrified of being labeled as anti-cop or anti-law enforcement, and they don't even want to put their names or even look at anti-reform bills. So the unions were the ones that take the lead. And even with the unions taking the lead, Jim Palmer had to go in a number of legislators' offices and sit down and said, we stand for this. We think this is good. And we will not bash you or hurt you or do anything against you if you support this legislation. Mm-hmm. That's what we needed. And quietly in the background, a number of unions still resisted this. And so it's very difficult to pass this law. Now, I need to tell you that the state of Missouri introduced our law word for word twice. And even after the incidents in Ferguson, they couldn't get our law out of committee. That's how tough it is to pass legislation regarding law enforcement.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so now, why did the union support your effort? Why was this union, police union boss willing to work with you on this instead of just giving you the stiff arm like every cop gives everybody?
Well, you know, Black Lives Matter has their form of protest. And if you go to our Facebook page or our webpage, you'll see that my form of protest was using advertising. Essentially, I created a billboard. It was a large smoking gun, and it said, when police kill, should they judge themselves? And I would go into communities where a law enforcement officer death occurred, and I would put up one, two, or more of these billboards. Things really started getting heated up here in Wisconsin when there was a young black man. His name was Derek Williams Jr., who suffocated in a backseat of a squad car. And the media kept playing it over and over again. And I made a decision to go into Milwaukee, and I put up 17 billboards with about 2.5 million people driving by each week. And then the local union in that city started attacking me. And as Mahatma Gandhi once said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they attack you, and then you win. So at that point, I made a decision that they're attacking me. Now it's time to ramp up the pressure. So I went from 17 billboards to 43. And at 43 billboards, the exposure was 12.5 million people per week were seeing these. And you're talking every major interstate going in and out of Milwaukee. And so at that point, they knew that I wasn't backing down. And there was another shooting that occurred just a short time after that in Madison, Wisconsin, the capital, and also the location of the police union. And I went to that city, and I also took out billboards, TV commercials, and newspaper print ads. And I just kept applying the pressure. Jim and I finally agreed that he would work with me and help take this down, or help me craft the legislation if I took the billboards down. So we didn't back down. Essentially, I made a decision to let the billboard lease expire. I didn't renew them. And then Jim started working with me. But even then, I had to resort to some pretty drastic measures to get the law passed. And in the article in Politico, I describe how I had to, one morning, very agonizingly, make a decision to purchase a national ad in USA Today. And Frank Serpico, the famous detective from New York, who Al Pacino starred in his life story, endorsed the reforms that we sought. So I took out a color ad in USA Today, and it was almost a full page. And I told, 4 million people, what is going on in Wisconsin. And then the legislators I worked with had told other legislators that Michael Bell doesn't plan on stopping there. He's also talking to the Wall Street Journal. So they knew that I wasn't going away. And also we had a possible presidential candidate in our state. And eventually they moved our law that was being heard from one committee that wouldn't hear it to a committee that would. And that started the ball rolling towards a positive direction.
Mm. And now this bill is... Now, it is the law in Wisconsin, correct?
It is the law, and there was some worries because all of a sudden now, who investigates the shootings? And some of the go-to was the Department of Criminal Investigations, and now their workload picked up tremendously. But to the credit of the legislators and to the governor, they funded it. They came up with several million dollars a year more so that way this organization can do external review and provide the data. Now, external investigation is good, but if you don't have independent review, you're not sure whether external investigation is going to be perfect. There was a shooting in our own local community. It was very questionable. A man had a plastic bucket. A police officer shot him 6 times through the chest. And there was the outside investigative team came in, did the investigation, but then the DA asked that investigative team to redact some material. And so that bothers me, but I know that's not perfect, but we have to have independent review. And like I said, the DA can't try to pull the wool over the public's eyes if a review board appointed by high-ranking elected official, whether it be the attorney general or the governor or even the chief judge, reviews this and say, yes, this is wholesome. This is good data. There's nothing but the public needs to trust it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, if anything, if they keep getting away with it anyway, then that's going to create an even worse controversy where, you know, what do we have to do to get a little bit of checks and balances on these guys? You bring up the one with the bucket. This is where they did a reenactment where they filled the bucket with concrete and put it on video so that they could say, look how dangerous a bucket could be. Yeah, sure, when you weigh it to equal, you know, now it's 75 pounds and you're wielding it as a weapon. But an empty bucket, not quite so scary. If you shot somebody who was coming at you with an empty bucket, everybody would, you know, they'd laugh you straight into a prison cell for trying to say that you were defending yourself with proportionate force there. So, that's just one example, and we all know the cops are going to keep doing this. I mean, it's not like you're going to run out of trials for the or incidents for these review panels to look at. And so, if even with the review and the independent check and everything else, if they keep getting away with it, then that's going to, I think, really crystallize the outrage even more. That, you know, something has to be done. And of course, the real answer is legalizing the drug trade above all and ending prohibition, which is, you know, the greatest cause of crime in the society and of, you know, all kinds of conflict. But, so now how many reviews have taken place under the new law? Are we seeing much progress with them, or were there any very questionable shootings for them to review yet?
7 days after the first shooting, 7 days after the law was passed, two shootings occurred, and one was very questionable. It was a man sleeping in a park in Milwaukee. His name was Dontre Hamilton. He was sleeping in a park. An officer got called, checked on, nothing wrong, left. Later on, somebody in this Starbucks close by called a second time, nothing wrong, officer left. Third time, officer came by, kind of harassed him a little bit, and the guy grabbed a baton. Well, essentially, the officers just fired 14 rounds into the guy, Dontre Hamilton, and it took his life. But I will say that for the first time ever in the state of Wisconsin, an officer was fired for not following protocol when he took this guy's life. The DA did not hold him criminally responsible, but the officer was fired. And so I do think that is a step forward, because
even having the review panel even being there led to more accountability in the local police department before the review panel had to even do anything.
That's right. And so that's what we need to move towards. I do think that there are some states out there that what's important about this bill is it mandated throughout the whole state of Wisconsin that any police involved death be handled with an external investigation. We did see some pockets of this type of thing across the United States. I think Eugene, Oregon had some. I thought there were, San Diego, I believe, does that. But unless you have independent review, like the case of Laquan McDonald down in Chicago, you had seven officers that are considered to be fired right now, because even though they did an external investigation, there was no independent review, and all the officers lied when they turned in the data. Mm-hmm. So it has to have independent review. So when your audience is trying to separate this, investigation is gathering the data, getting the dash cam, so forth. And I do believe in body cams, because body cams are very much like the flight data recorder on an aircraft. They collect all the facts at the moment. And the next thing that has to happen is there has to be independent review. And that is taking all that data and say, what really happened and how can we prevent this from happening again? And a critical incident review board could determine, like, you know, we suggest that three things be adopted within this agency to help avoid this type of death from happening again. That's what the NTSB does, and it gives those recommendations to the FAA. There was another article I wrote about a year prior, and it was called How to Stop Cop Hunting, because we knew that this epidemic of retaliating against the police was going to occur, and it's in Politico. And one of the things I pointed out is when Sully landed his jet in the Hudson River, that the NTSB still had to clear him. And even though everything worked out and all of those people lived, there was like 14 recommendations on how to make it even safer. And so those are the types of things that would happen if you have a good critical incident review board giving data to a police department.
And this may be a dramatization, but it's in the trailer for the new movie where they say, yeah, the flight simulators say you could have made it back to the airport. And he's like, no, man, I'm telling you. But, and that was one where he was the hero who saved every life on the plane. But even then, he's going to be second and third guessed over the choices that he made that day.
Yeah, well, and, you know, he knew he wasn't off the hook. He knew that this had to go to investigation. And so, I mean, he was even uneasy about it because he thought he did everything right. He lost all his engines and he had to ditch his airplane in the Hudson River. But still, the NTSB had to look at all the details, every single detail. Was there fuel involved? Was there the weather involved? Was there some procedure he didn't follow? Was there a piece of information that he didn't use? And so once all that was done, then they made a recommendation that this was an issue, you know, this was a mechanical issue. He lost his engine because of geese going into his engines, and he did the best course of action that he could. And that's what needs to happen in law enforcement. You know, you take a look at the Ferguson shooting of Michael Brown, and you say, why didn't the officer just stay in his car? You know, he had a big SUV. He was against a guy that was totally unarmed, and his backup was only 90 seconds away. If he would have just waited, but no, he had to aggressively go pursue this guy. And so one of the procedures that might have came out of the Michael Brown shooting was wait for backup. Remember your situational awareness. Call for help and then handle it constructively. Those types of recommendations need to be made, but then they have to be disseminated against to all the police departments that are under that jurisdiction. You know, before I could fly my jet, I used to have to sign a flight crew information file. And essentially, if somebody had a problem with a jet in Japan and I needed to know about it to be safe before I flew in Wisconsin, I had to read the full accident report on that and be aware of something that maybe took somebody's life or caused major damage to an aircraft. I think something like that needs to be implemented with law enforcement. You know, if somebody learns something about taking somebody's life, disseminate it, you know. And one of the things that I'm really excited about with Jim Palmer, because he's very forward thinking, is he told me that he is going to start looking at other extremely hazardous professions and find out what they do and see if any of those things can apply to law enforcement. Hooray. I mean, that is so forward thinking. I haven't seen any law enforcement individual even think of that. Here we are, a union leader that's willing to do that for the greater good of everybody.
Yeah. And for the greater good of his own interest and his own, the police that he represents. So after all, everybody always says, well, you know, maybe there was a questionable shooting here or there, but those are just bad apples. But of course, the cliche goes that a couple of bad apples spoil the whole barrel. And they end up, you know, presuming the legitimacy of the current law enforcement system as it exists at all. They are losing the confidence of the American people that they are our security force rather than simply the armed arm of the state, which is kind of a different concept than our security force. And, you know, Palmer, you made him feel the pressure. He started doing the right thing because he felt the pressure. It wasn't just that you had some billboards. It's that people were responding to the billboards. The billboards mattered. And you know, the conversation in the state was changing, and he had to get out in front of the parade. You made him do the right thing. And so that's the model. That's the most important part of this, I think, is, you know, Black Lives Matter really needs to get a better slogan than "This is our problem, not yours," which is what their slogan basically is now. When they're only 13% of the population, you know, if you include all of them. And when their slogan needs to be accountability for killer cops, no matter who the freaking victim is. And that's how to better protect black lives from killer cops anyway. That's the best way. Accountability. That's the question. And then the same goes for all of us too, is we can't do this without following your example of getting the police and their unions and their representatives to agree and push the thing forward together. If it's a fight between activists and cops, as you said, you're not going to find a legislator in any state legislature in the union who's willing to be the guy to take on the cops and shove this kind of thing down their throat. It's just never going to happen. It has to be because politically everybody decides that we've come to a crisis point here, a crisis of confidence in the police, a crisis in, you know, people being afraid to leave their house in the morning without getting gunned down by these guys, whatever the problems are. And so that's really the model. I don't know exactly what kind of review and independent this and that. I can definitely tell you're on the right track, but absolutely you have proven that the right thing to do is push the issue to the point where they have to come to you, and the police unions have to come to you and compromise and work with the activists in order to get legislation passed to, you know, begin some form of accountability here. This is the point that everybody's been missing and that you finally nailed right on the head here, Michael.
Before, they were only hurting others, but now, because of the current system, and they're being shot at, and they're getting hurt, they're hurting themselves with the system, they're finally willing to listen. And so all I'm trying to do is say that, you know, I support law enforcement, but I refuse to accept bad policing, just like I support good pilots. And if an aviator kills somebody, shame on them. He shouldn't have been in a cockpit. So, well, Scott, thank you very, very, very much for having me on the show. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to be able to get this article out there and allow people to know that there is a way out from this. What seems like a cycle that just goes back and forth between police shooting people and then people shooting police. There is a way forward.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming back on the show, Michael. I sure appreciate it.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Yep. All right. So that's michaelbell.info for his website. And also find him at Plea for Change is the group on Facebook. And you got to read this thing. It's really important. Send around. Anybody knows a judge or a politician, a legislator? My friend is a lawyer who works for a legislator here in Texas. I sent it to him. Reaching Across the Thin Blue Line, how the head of a police union and the father of a son killed by a police officer found common cause. It's in Politico magazine at politico.com.